welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, March 4th, 2013. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here yet again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
Hey, and we're actually doing this at the scheduled time, the normal time we record this on on early Monday UTC or Sunday evening U.S. time. And we'll see.
Correct, sir. You are correct.
I probably still won't put the damn thing out until Friday because, you know, look, the way my schedule works is like, as soon as I get off this podcast, I'm going down to dinner. My mom's coming over for dinner, so we're having the family dinner kind of thing. And then I'm not getting back to it tonight. And then, like, every other night of the week, there's usually something going on. I'm taking care of the kid, whatever. Usually, the first moment I get where I have the time to just sit down and actually throw the thing up and put it out ends up being early Friday morning before I go to work.
Aha.
Sometimes I, like, leave it cooking when I leave home, and then at lunch during work, I actually hit the final button to publish it, you know? And, you know, that's just when the time shows up, you know? I don't know.
I can understand that.
Okay. Anyway, so we've got, you know, honestly, like, look, we last recorded a show, what, 3 days ago?
Something like that.
Yes, it hasn't been as long as it usually is, and it seems like it's been a little bit slow. You know, we had the sequester actually happened. Nobody's noticed yet, but
nobody's
it's only been
dead
a few
yet.
Days. You know,
nobody's dead.
But right. I've seen a lot more comparisons about, like, you know, hey, we talked last week. It's like a 3% cut. It may be a bit more in some areas, but also if you do comparison in time, it's like going back to where the expenditures were like 3 or 4 years ago.
Right. I mean, the one thing is, I mean, that's true, but yet at the same time, like, the way it's hitting programs and things that are, it's all discretionary spending, number one. Okay? So, it's only those. So, I mean, you know what? It's something like this, for example. Like, I just found, like, with the sequester, for example, a number of air traffic control towers down here are closing. Okay?
Yeah.
For example,
but mostly they're at, you know, less often used airports.
Correct. Yes, these are like towers at
small private airports.
A couple of small, not private airports, but there's a smaller secondary airports. Okay, with very little commercial traffic,
right,
it's mostly
exactly.
private.
It's mostly private traffic. That's what I meant.
So you know, I don't know. I mean, I mean,
there are a number of people saying that, hey, now that this has happened, I mean, the worst possible scenario for Obama is if this goes on a while and then everybody's like, yeah, this is okay. It's not that bad. And then, in terms of government services, and then by the time sort of economic effects take place, like federal employees are laid off and that starts percolating through the economy, by the time that actually all plays out, you know, maybe we have another double dip recession or whatever, and then it's Obama's fault. Like, because
right.
people have a disconnect between, oh, okay, well, maybe the reason all this is happening is because of what happened back in March. And the other thing is, apparently the sequester cuts specifically are actually only the next 7 months, the time frame in which it's sort of arbitrary. After that, it has to be governed by a new continuing resolution where the priorities will be defined again.
Correct. Exactly. This is not something that is like, like for the next 10 years. It's just, you know, until they agree on a budget, basically, or a continuing resolution.
Right. Yeah, because, you know, a budget. Ha. Huh.
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I'm trying to be optimistic.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know
if there's anything else to say about the sequester. It's happened. The next deadline is the government shutdown at the end of March, and everybody says that's the sort of the more significant deadline at this point. And
right.
we'll see what happens. I don't know. And we'll see if the pain starts actually hitting, you know, or whether people are just like, okay, whatever. I guess we can do without that spending.
Maybe not. We'll see.
And you know, I mean, when people are talking about, like, really to, you know, we need to cut much more, I mean, cut 20%, 30%, whatever, to balance the budget, I mean, you're talking about much more draconian cuts than this. So, you know, theoretically, the people who think that's okay should think this is just fine, too, which is why the Republicans let this go through.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's the reason. And look, it's a situation like right now where these guys, I think they see, like, you know, it wasn't like the fiscal cliff situation where everybody's going to feel the impact of that, okay, substantially, okay? And they're gambling that they can just, you know, push stuff off. And, I mean, I think that, I mean, really the real showdown is that government shutdown. That's the point where, you know, things may get negotiated. And I think that maybe they think that it won't last that long. Because the thing is that I heard that layoffs or other changes wouldn't have to happen until April,
yep,
based on this change. So therefore, I think they're gambling. They've got another month, and that's it. That's how they're thinking right now, and that's all it is. So
yeah, and so things will move along, and they'll move along. And, you know, another thing I've seen people commenting a lot is that, you know, and I realized our tone was actually somewhat like this at the end of last week's show, where it's like, a pox on both your houses. God damn it, come to a deal. Whereas, right, you know, look, if you really look at it this time around, look, this really is the Republicans. The Democrats have time after time agreed to additional spending cuts in areas that they care about. And yes, the Republicans gave a little bit on taxes.
Right.
But to continue going any further, you know, right now, and the situation might be different at different points in time in the past and in the future, but right now, the folks who are saying we have an absolute drop-dead line in the sand that we will not cross no matter what are the Republicans.
That's true.
They're saying we will not even talk about anything that results in new additional revenues. We gave up what we were going to in December, January. We're not going to do it again.
And, I mean, it's just, you know, look, if you're going to make a grand bargain, like in a couple of times people have talked about doing,
yeah,
you've got to, like, you can't do it with, like, preset, like, conditions like that. You got to go in and say, listen, everything's on the table. Convince me. Give me something, and maybe I'll change my mind on this. But convince me, okay? But if you're already going in, it's like, I don't know, you're I mean, going into any negotiation, like, with, like, saying, like, oh yeah, I'm here to deal, but you know what? That's off the table. But
well, I mean, to be fair here, the president has also said, you know, he will not consider a deal that doesn't include revenue. So he's also essentially taken some stuff off the table. But it's been very one-sided in these negotiations lately, and it's just because you're right. Fundamentally, if you're actually interested in dealing, then you have to come to the table willing to give up stuff that's important to you.
Right.
In exchange for other things.
Exactly.
You know?
And the Republicans are not willing to give anything up.
As far as I
can tell.
Well, and I think what they've learned is they kind of don't have to. In this case, it was just do nothing results in a policy outcome they weren't that unhappy with. So why not do nothing?
Doesn't exactly totally do nothing. I mean, let's be realistic. They agreed to this idiotic thing.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm talking about this latest thing. Like, everybody agreed to the sequester back whenever we
Correct. Exactly.
I'm talking in the last couple months, the reality has been if nobody did anything at all, the sequester would happen. And the Republicans' point of view on that is, hey, you know, maybe these aren't the exact cuts we wanted, but we wanted cuts. We wanted lots of cuts. So this is a move in the right direction. So it's okay. Let it happen. And I think, you know, we will actually find out, you know, assuming we don't make a deal in the next few weeks, we'll find out, okay, well, how bad is it to have these cuts? And like we were saying, if everybody sort of shrugs their shoulders and says, hey, this wasn't that bad, then, okay, you know, Republicans win that round and we move on. You know, and maybe it really wasn't that bad. I mean, nobody doubts that there's lots of excess here. I mean, there's lots of arguments that defense spending is way out of control and above and beyond what it needs to be.
Well, I totally agree. I'm with you on that. I totally agree.
Domestic spending in many ways is out of control and way more than it needs to be. The question in both of these cases is ideally you want to make cuts that are smart, that, you know, eliminate the things that really aren't providing value. Keep the things that are providing value, get more efficient, blah, blah, blah. I mean, there are a lot of arguments that say in the end, you could cut out all the waste that exists and it's still not enough. And that's a very important argument. But still, when you do cuts, I think almost everybody agrees that the government spends money on things it doesn't need to. But when you do those cuts, you want to be smart about them. And even in the case of, everyone sort of agrees the big long-term bombs are all about, healthcare and old age care and Social Security, blah, 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 all of these things combined. Like, individual pieces are actually, like, Social Security is actually not in bad shape right now. But when you look at those things and try to say, okay, well, the problem isn't necessarily that we're providing too much services. It may be that we're paying too much for them. And so what's the issue here? The issue is cost. Well, what's that mean? If you start digging into the costs, there are a lot of companies out there. There are a lot of doctors out there. There are a lot of whatever out there that are making nice, handsome profits. Right. And that's part of it. And so if you're defending those profits, you can't at the same time defend the idea of cost cutting.
No, I know. But look. We're going to see what the heck the impact of this shit is. We just don't know, like, right now. We really don't, because, I mean, I got to be honest with you. I mean, the details, really, of how the agencies are really going to, like, cut this money and what they're going to do and respond and whatever, we still don't know. So, we'll see. I mean, heck, let me tell you something, all right? I'm like, right now, look, if the agencies can figure out how to operate with less money and we don't have to go back, I'm like, fuck it. I'm perfectly happy.
I'm on
board. Screw it. I'm on board. Fuck it.
Yeah. And you know, the question is more, it partially is about timing as well, because if indeed this results in layoffs of significant number of federal employees, well, guess what that does to the unemployment rate? And guess that what that does to consumer spending and other things that drive the economy.
Right.
And so even if in the long term you absolutely agree that, hey, this whole department over here shouldn't even exist, let's shut them all down and fire all the people. Even if you think that's the right policy outcome, that's going to have
an increase unemployment.
It's going to have an impact the economy. Yeah, it's going to have a short-term economic impact that has to wash its way through.
Absolutely.
And what does that mean? That might means if you do an immediate dramatic reduction in spending, guess what? It may well result in another economic slump.
Yep.
We'll see. We'll see. I don't know. We'll see. But, at the same time, the arguments are, it's relatively small percentage-wise. Maybe it's not going to be that bad. So we'll see.
We'll see.
We'll talk more about it in the coming weeks, I am sure.
For
the time being, let's take a break, and we'll come back talking about, I don't know, something else.
Something.
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 And we're back. So, Yvonne.
Yep.
What do you want topic two to be?
What do I want?
We talked about a few things right before we started the show. Pick one. Yeah, I've stumped him.
Let's go talk about Apple.
Okay. We always talk about Apple. Let's talk about Apple.
Well,
and specifically, you want the stock
price.
Actually,
the stock has been a result. Apple's stock has gyrated a lot over the last couple of months. Now, look, you could argue a whole bunch of reasons why the gyrations are. Because one of the things I love about about all the people out there who say they know everything about everything, because you get all these pundits talking out of their ass out there. Oh, it's because Apple didn't launch the iPhone 75X, or no, it's because they're getting killed in the market. I'm like, oh, it's because, I'm like, I'm like, listen, all of these people are trying to understand why the stock market moves in one way or another. And the reality is that there's a lot of gyrations in the stock market that have nothing to do with any other shit.
Well, okay. It's psychological. It's
yes.
A bunch of people are talking smack, and so it goes down. It may have no reality, or it might be complete coincidence.
Well, there's a lot of random stuff in here too. There's valuation, there's values, but it's like almost the same thing. Like, for example, like gasoline right now. I just went and pumped gas right now. Gas is at $4.30. I don't know. Premium is at $4.30 a gallon on average around here. There is a glut of fucking oil in North America, okay, all right? And somehow, gas prices are surging, okay, all right? And look, it has nothing to do with supply, okay? Nothing, okay? Uh-huh. This is really a lot of fucking stock market people just playing the number, okay? They're playing it on the way up. They're playing it on the way down. I think a lot of stuff with Apple has to do with that, because, you know, I'm looking at a chart like right now. I looked at Apple stock over the last 5 years compared to
Yeah, I'm looking at the same chart. Okay, compared to Google.
Okay. All right.
Let me get that same thing up.
And if you look at it right now, I mean, Google is up like 80%. Yeah. Apple, still with the drop, is still over 200% up. Okay, all right, in the same time period since 2010. Okay, actually since 2008.
And I'll want to point out, if you compare it to like an index, like the Dow Jones or the NASDAQ.
It blows the
NASDAQ by comparison is, you mentioned Google is up about 70%. NASDAQ is up about 40%. And exactly. The Dow is only up about 15 in that same time frame.
Exactly. So, look, this is a thing right now where everybody, Apple has become.
I will say, though, of course, that's completely dependent on time frame. If you look only at the last year, you know, Apple is down 21%.
Sure.
And Google is up 29%.
Right.
So
now. Now, but you know, let's face it. The thing is that's the thing about looking at short-term time frames in stock and valuations versus longer term. But the bottom line is that, look, everybody is talking like the sky is falling at Apple, or for some reason whatsoever that I am like, what the fuck numbers or things are you looking at?
And this is where we were talking a few weeks ago too, in terms of the cash they have. I mean, they can basically go tell the stock market to go fuck themselves,
right?
And they could decide, hey, we're not making anything for the next 3 years because we're going to just go close our doors and we're going to think for a while and figure out what we're going to come back with.
We're going to figure it out. I'm like, it's basically at that level, and I'm like, it's like demand for the products is not down,
right?
Okay. It has been surging, okay?
And even when you look at market share and look at the gains of other platforms, even if you have like, okay, Android is selling more, and we've talked about profit margin being different, but Android is selling more, but that doesn't mean Apple is selling less, because the market itself is still growing.
And the market is growing, and like, let's face it, great. So everybody's talking, oh, Google is like impacting Apple with this. Look, here's the problem, right? Google may be doing whatever the fuck they're doing with Chrome and with Android. Here's a little problem. It's the same problem that you and me have talked about Google for years, okay? Google still only makes fucking money on search. And even now,
And more specifically, the advertising on search.
The advertising on search. And even now, with Android and all this shit, how much more money did Google make in the Christmas quarter, okay, this year versus last year? Zero. None. Not one more dime. And so it's one of these things where I'm like, okay, revenue – from one year to the other was up 40%, but profits did not increase at all. Okay, Apple had the same – and nobody is saying that at Google the sky is falling, even though, yeah, they're doing all of this stuff, but they're not making any fucking money on it. I mean, let me put it to you this way. Google right now has a stock market cap of about $200 billion, okay, all right? Apple made in one quarter, the last quarter, made more money than Google did all of last year, okay? In the last quarter of the last year, Apple made more money than in the entire fucking year, okay? And somehow, right now, Google is worth, the stock market cap is 50% of Apple's. And I'm like, okay, guys, you know, let me put it to you this way. By the end of this year, Apple will probably have, in cash, the stock market cap of Google. In cash.
Right.
Just money to burn. And I'm like,
There you go. That's how you solve this problem. Apple just buys Google.
Exactly. For cash. Fuck it. What the hell? I'll write a check.
You're a pain in our ass. Here you go.
Fuck. You're a pain in our asses. You're fucking busting our balls. Here you go. Here's $200 billion. Get the fuck out of me. You know, just get the hell out of my face. And I'm like going and I'm like, everybody keeps talking Samsung and what they're doing and whatever. Listen, Samsung, my brother has a Samsung smart TV at home.
Yeah.
Have you tried to use the interface on these damn TVs?
I actually just got one for my mom because it had decent reviews, but I've just got it set up as a TV. I've not even tried to use all the smart stuff on it yet.
Okay.
I haven't plugged it into the internet either.
I will tell you that my brother-in-law has one of these. I mean, and my brother, both of them have this TV with all this supposedly smart features.
I presume it's crap.
It is such junk. I mean, it is so the remote control is undecipherable. The software is incredibly difficult to use.
Well, and I'll tell you, this is not uncommon. Like I've used like the menuing systems on a couple Blu-ray players, on a couple of other sort of internet smart boxes or whatever. The only one of these that is decent is the Apple TV.
It's exactly right.
All of these others are like, they're ugly. They're confusing. It's hard to figure out what you want on them. And it's like, really? And I certainly haven't tried all of them. I've tried one or two. So
I've tried a number of these. And they're all incredibly difficult to use. And I'm like, wait a second. Okay, do you think that all these people that have been buying like millions of these little $99 Apple TVs or purchases are now going to go and like decide to buy a fucking Android phone right now to go and realize, oh, shit, I can't even connect it to this stupid Samsung TV because it doesn't really talk to it. Or even if it does, it's incredibly fucking complicated because the software interface of the fucking TV is undecipherable. No! I mean, it's like, if Apple doesn't come out with the iPhone mini, they're screwed. I mean, there's articles saying this, and I'm like, really? What are you thinking? I know a couple of people that work at Apple stores.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I mean, dude, and I've been asking just every once in a while, dude, how's the traffic? Is it down? They're like, are you fucking kidding me? I mean, it's like February and it feels like it's fucking Christmas, for God's sakes.
I'll tell you what, there's a big Apple store here at, I'm in the Seattle area. There's one in Bellevue. Okay. They had sort of a medium sized Apple store there. And it was always crammed full.
Yeah.
So towards the end of last year, they opened a new big one that was like four times the size of the one they had. It's not quite. Yeah, I think the one like in the flagship stores in New York and stuff are a little bit bigger, but this was huge. Okay, and four times the size of the one they had before. I went in there a few weeks later. Guess what? It's packed.
Still
too.
Packed. Here's the same thing here. The Apple store, like near my house, I have one here at the mall, was also very small. I mean, that place originally, oh my God, it was so crowded. The air conditioning, I don't know what they did. They have to do something with the air conditioning. It's always like sweltering, okay, for a while until they did something massive. They told me, yeah, they had to get the mall management. They had to fucking pump 10 times more AC into this fucking place. They just, exactly, they did the same thing. A store, quadruple the size. I went in the other day, and I was like, what the fuck? Are they giving shit away? But here's the other thing people don't get, okay? If forget about – if they're all thinking about the fucking phone and the whatever, what is it that the things that have happened at the store? There's support. Yeah. There's service. There's accessories. There's all this other stuff. I'm sorry, but I buy a Samsung phone right now. If I got to go get it fixed, I'm not going to the fucking Apple store where they're just going to go in 2 seconds, swap the phone, give me the other thing, boom, get me the fuck out of there. Okay?
Just,
no.
Just last week, my mom, she dropped something on her laptop. The screen broke. So, mm-hmm. you know, she takes it into the store. You know, and she dropped something, so she's going to have to pay. It's not free. But, you know, they're like, okay, here's the problem. Here's what we're going to do. We'll take care of it. We'll have it for you. And they were going to have it overnight, but then, like, they actually got the part. And they're like, they actually looked at it and they're like, you know, this part's not up to our quality standards, so we're going to order you another one. It'll be another day. You know, and that's the kind of thing. Like, a lot of other places would just put the damn thing in there and hope you didn't notice.
That's right.
You know?
But that's my point. My point is that it's the problem why other computer companies are losing market share and why they're not getting this. It's you're looking at all of a sudden everybody's obsessing over, well, the Galaxy S4 is going to have a 1.1-inch bigger screen. And I'm like, you know what, guys? Listen, you're not looking at the ecosystem. You're not looking at everything that Apple is doing that's doing right. It's not just the device. Listen, Apple never beat anybody on specs on anything, okay? Yeah. All right? They had never have, okay? What they did was the entire thing from the beginning to end was better. The software was better. You got better updates. You get better support. You get better this. You get better that. The end-to-end experience is substantially better. And you know what? As far as I can tell, Google's not doing that. Samsung's not doing that. None of those people are still anywhere nearly close to matching that end-to-end experience. When I see Samsung going and like matching that end-to-end experience, then I'm going to start saying, well, wait a second. But even that's playing catching up, because all these fucking people, what they're doing is catching up. And all the fucking geeks that are talking about tech specs and whatever, look, these are the same moronic geeks that 10 years ago thought the iPod was bullshit because the Creative Media Player had 3 times the storage, okay? And I'm like, seriously, dude, you don't get it. You don't get it. You've never gotten it. And you know what? Even after Apple has become the fucking biggest computer company in the world, you still don't fucking get it and are still saying the same shit.
And to fully disclose, you have some Apple stock.
Oh, yes, I do. But I've had it for like 15 years. It's not like I fucking like,
and,
you know.
And to fully disclose, I have one share of Apple stock.
Yeah, share.
Okay, one share. One share.
Now, yes, I do have Apple stock. I've had it for a very long time, okay? But the one thing about it, it's just – no, I it's just the thing. It's just the articles with all the rationales. Well, the problem is that the screen on the iPhone 5 was not big enough. They need to – there's all these guys. They need to launch a big screen immediately. And I'm like, what are you talking about, okay? What the fuck are you talking about? I mean, it's just kind of like ridiculous, you know, but that's what you get when, you know, I think that, you know, one of the things, like 10 years ago, Apple may have gotten a lot of talk in the tech industry with Steve Jobs being around, but in the business world, it didn't. Okay. Now the problem is that Apple being so fucking big, it's like something Apple happens now and it moves everything. I mean, because it's the either like right now, whether it's back up or down, it's the, you know, it's the second most valuable company in the world, like right now. So, I guess this is what you get. You know, this kind of bigness gets this kind of attention now. But you know, there's a lot of idiots out there. Is the only problem, but oh well. You know, so
yeah, and you know, there's a lot of. And going back to where you started, the movements of the stock have not of and this is not specific to Apple. This is true across the board of the markets. The movement of any one of these stocks is almost never directly correlated to actual like measurable metrics about the company's performance. It's all about the psychology,
speculation, rumors, psychology,
speculation, rumors. People intentionally starting rumors to move the stock one way or another.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, all this kind of stuff. I mean, there was a lot of talk back a couple months ago about, like, there was a bunch of outstanding options or something at a $500 strike price or whatever. And miraculously, the stock closed on the day that these expired at exactly 500. You know, it's like, okay, really, whatever. You know, I could have the numbers wrong. But, you know, something along those lines. And, you know, and it's just like, these aren't, you know, the motions up and down and sideways here, you know, it would be nice if the stock market was rational, where you could take some metric and say, okay, the correct price of a stock is this, based on these numbers that this company reports in its quarterly reports. And you could probably do an exercise there and come up with a pretty good number for what the company is really worth. But that has absolutely jack shit to do with the price of the stock market.
Totally, absolutely, 100% dead on. I mean, one of the things is like, I mean, now what that will do is it will tell it will indicate you can't like predict the stock price like what it should be right now. However, what it will indicate to you is that if things don't materially change in terms of the company fundamentals, usually the stock will gravitate towards that number. Okay, because it's like it's a thing of like undervalued, because things in real life can get substantially undervalued or overvalued. Okay, but eventually, like they will gravitate back towards somewhere near that number, and maybe they'll overshoot it again the other way and whatever. But in the end, you look at it, and there is a trend that it will get somewhere, follow that line. Okay, and the one thing is that yes, I mean you can look at the Apple price or other stock price, and yeah, it may right now it doesn't make any sense. But what my unless business fundamentals change substantially, it will probably gravitate towards that direction where it should be based on what the real.
And there's also a very because of what we've just talked about. There's a very different thing. It's not the same thing to talk about the health of a stock versus the health of the company.
Correct. Totally. Absolutely. Because there's been nothing fundamental that's changed over the health of the company just because the stock price has fallen 40% from its peak. Nothing at all. I mean, nothing substantially has changed. So, I mean, it's not like the store shut down, the executives fled, demand collapsed, nothing.
I mean, maybe next year, but...
Maybe next year, but certainly not at this moment, no. So... Anyway, so that was like the one thing. It's just that, it's been like there's just been a lot of like talk and movement. And it's like, I mean, it's just amazing to see so many people talk about it's just amazing to me to see, I mean, all the people that are talking about the stock and all the stuff that I've seen that it's just like, I mean, the stuff said that's just hilarious. Okay. In terms of the opinion, like, I don't know if you've seen all these rumors, but like, the iWatch now, the iPhone Mini,
yep.
The very big iPhone.
The iPhone Maxi?
The iPhone, yeah. I mean, Jesus. I mean, there's just been like all over the place. I mean, it's just bonkers. I mean, all this stuff, So.
I mean, my takeaway from all of this is just like whenever you start talking stock, I mean, in the end, these things are random walks. It's gambling. In the end, it's gambling.
I mean, there is part gambling. Yes, absolutely.
I mean, yes, you're right. There's some fundamentals. If in the end a company goes under, its stock goes to zero. Okay.
It's correct. Yes.
So if it's going really badly, it's going to go down.
If
it's going really well, it'll probably go up.
Yep.
In the long term. But in between, if you're talking about daily or even monthly fluctuations,
you're trying to make money.
It's
you're
all
trying to make
bullshit.
Money over the next 3 months. It's you might as well go to Vegas. Basically, reality. That's true. Okay.
Yeah, I've said before, the only real thing here is like if you're trying to make money by buying a stock and then selling it again later, by definition, that's speculation. The only like, sort of non-speculative scenario for stock buying is that you're buying a company that regularly pays dividends and you're buying it for the dividend stream.
Yeah, that's true. But, oh well.
Which Apple does now, by the way.
Which Apple does now, by the way.
$265 a year or something.
Yeah, it's a decent payout. I get a nice
I get $2.65.
I'm getting a little
because I have one share. Anyway, let's take a break. We'll be back again in a second. Something non Apple and whatever. Okay, we'll be back.
We'll be back.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s. and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, here we are. So,
Yeah, let's talk about group sex. I mean Groupon.
So, the thing that got everybody's attention on this, let's see. Let me bring it up, unless you already have it up.
His resignation note. Oh, I'm leaving to spend time with my family. Oh, no, not really. I got fired.
Yep, that's pretty much. The people of Groupon, after 4.5 intense and wonderful years as CEO of Groupon, I've decided that I'd like to spend more time with my family. Just kidding, I was fired today. If you're wondering why, you haven't been paying attention.
Yes. Well, let me ask you, I mean, the whole thing, I still don't even, I mean... Have you ever used a coupon from I have not.
I think I'm not sure whether or not my wife has, but I certainly have not. I just coupons and that whole thing just turns me the hell off. Like anything that just screams of they are trying to get me to buy something I would not otherwise buy. I don't care how much of a discount it is. If I wasn't going to buy it anyway, then why would I respond to that? You know, so the way I always look is if I've already decided to buy something, then, you know, maybe I'll look around for the best price. But this whole thing smacks of there's a deal right now. So that's the whole business model. So you have to go jump in and get the freaking deal
or whatever. It's kind of like what freaking Priceline used to be like years ago. I don't know.
I mean, well, this is a very common retail model. I mean, coupons are not new.
Price light negotiator!
Coupons are not new, and discounts are not new, and sales are not new, and they work, which is why people do these things generally. But the whole Groupon model was, I don't know, it's not just a JCPenney having a sale.
Right.
You know, because JCPenney has a sale. They'll have a sale on a few items. They may even have negative profit on those items, making them a loss leader for you to come into the store, hoping you'll buy something else. But usually, they're cut into their margin, but they won't go negative. And meanwhile, like I said, they get you into the store. Maybe you buy some other stuff, blah, blah, blah. The Groupon model was, I guess you were supposed to do that, but the people who were providing the coupons often were providing them at a loss, in the hopes that they'd bring new customers into the store who would come back and become regular customers. And I gather that just hasn't happened all that often. They'll come in for their coupon, but then they'll never come back.
Well, I think that the whole thing revolving around his firing had to do with the fact that they had a pretty, you know, a lot of people were subscribing to their model to try to distribute and send out coupons. I just think that a lot of, you know, they were talking that it just didn't evolve. It didn't, they weren't using like intelligence in order to target like their customers and a whole bunch of other stuff. So look, I mean, I'd also say
there's a fundamental disconnect. Even if you target well for the offer, the mere fact that you're doing the offer this way targets a certain type of bargain hunter person who's not necessarily the best customer that these companies want to come back.
Yeah. So I think that the whole thing is just, I mean, he's a quirky CEO. He got fired. I don't know. I've never used
He was also a co-founder of the company, right?
Right. Yes. I've never used the damn thing. I've seen Groupon coupons, but I don't know. I mean, I guess that if you're going to do like targeted marketing, okay, you have to have the right data, okay, to do that, and you have to be providing relevant offers, and you have to be providing stuff that is going to drive like profits to the people who are giving out those coupons. And if they're not seeing that, I mean, then you know. not going to happen. I know that. I think the main reason why he got canned, aside from the products and whatever, I think it was just the fact that I guess think the company kept missing, results. They just kept making forecasts that this and that was going to happen,
and it didn't.
And you know, there's one thing that nobody likes is unpredictability. I mean, that's what I've seen. It's been my experience in this business. People get fired over that all the time. So, you know, the bottom line is, I mean, that's one of the reasons why Apple had been, for example, so successful over the years. They made a prediction of the number. They always blew it out. This guy apparently kept promising shit, never hit it. And, yeah, so people didn't like that very much.
Yeah, and I'm sure, like, I mean, he's probably had a pretty decent payday from this, right?
I heard that apparently, yeah, that there's actually one of the articles. Don't weep for Groupon ex-CEO Andrew Mason. Andrew Mason isn't leaving Groupon empty-handed. Groupon's board gave the 32-year-old chief executive the heave-ho on Thursday after Mason presided over the controversial and one of the fastest-growing young companies in recent memory. Time will tell whether Mason will be remembered for his antics and for being loosey-goosey with accounting rules or for building new marketing category with a company he steered $5 billion annual billings and an IPO faster than most companies on the planet. Read the rest of the story and what the heck? Okay. Hold on. Where is this from?
Is this from the journal?
This is from the Digits blog on the Wall Street Journal.
Okay.
Mason owns a 7.1 stake in Groupon, and his stock is worth $228 million at today's prices. Not bad. Mason's net worth was also padded by pre-IPO stock transactions that raised eyebrows when they came to light before Groupon's November 2011 initial public offering. All told, Mason and his fellow Groupon co-founder Aaron Lokvrovsky and Bradley Keywell took nearly $600 million out of Groupon while it was still private in the form of dividend payments and stock sales, fueled by frenetic demand for Groupon shares before the company went public. Mason's slug of the pre-IPO riches was more than $31 million. Mason didn't return a request for a comment. A spokesman for Lokvrovsky and Keywell said the pair haven't sold Groupon shares after the IPO. There you go. So, yeah, he's got a quarter of a billion dollars.
He's doing fine.
I mean, you know what? He'll be perfectly fine.
Yeah. You know? I mean, this is one of those things. I think we've talked about this with respect to like the lottery or whatever, but the same thing applies. Like if you're in a company early and get all kinds of stock, I mean, I know people who've, you know, been in that situation and found and are still sort of driven for the next thing that they're going to do or whatever. I'll tell you, if I ever came into that kind of windfall, I'd be retired. I'm
done. I'm fucking. Oh, yeah. I'm fucking done.
I will find things to keep myself busy.
And I'll do other stuff, but getting another fucking job to try to hit the payday? No.
Yeah. No, I'm
just like, you know.
Oh, believe me, I would keep myself busy. I have all kinds of things I'd want to do.
I got all kinds of shit. I got, you know, I got boats to buy and other stuff, and, you know.
I mean, I'm not saying I'd spend all day sitting on the beach. I have projects I'd want to work on, but I would not be doing a 9-to-5 grind, you know.
No, yeah. No. I'm not like that. But I'd be doing stuff, I know this guy. I met him like about 8 years ago, and we took an executive education course together. Okay,
yeah.
And the guy was Silicon Valley. I mean, this guy. You know, I am connected with him. I'm not going to say his name, but I am connected with him on LinkedIn. Okay, yeah. All right, we connected ever. You know, we've kept track of each other ever since. This guy has gone. I've never seen anybody go work through so many startups in my life. I mean, this guy, when I met him, he was working at one. He jumped to another one that he spent 11 months at. Then he worked on another one for another 2 years. Then he jumped for another one for another 2.5 years. Then he went to one for 6 months. Then he went to another. Yeah, I mean, it's like, I mean, boom. I mean, the guy and he's like, and he works now at a couple of different ones. Okay, you know, it's like all at the same time. The guy is just all he did, and he told me he was just looking for that freaking payday. And the guy is like, the guy's a little bit older than I am. So, I mean, I'm like, but the guy's consistently been doing this ever since like around the dot-com era, this is what the guy has done. That's what the guy's done. I mean, just chasing that multi-million. He hasn't hit it yet, I'm sure. But I, you know, I gotta give. I don't know if I head out to the coast. I may be heading out there soon. I gotta go give him a call, see how the hell he's doing. But that's just been his thing, you know, trying to hit that payday. I gotta tell you, if I by luck for some reason I hit one of those fucking paydays, I'm done. But I'm not chasing one.
I can't even. I worked once at a smallish company under 25 people. I think the one takeaway I got out of that ain't for me. I'm not doing that again. You know, I mean, I want a nice, stable public company. You know,
absolutely. I had Sam knows when I first graduated from college, I was doing my own business for a few years, and I was just like, you know what? That's it. Not for me either.
Okay. So. Let's take another quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll probably wrap it up. But if you have any more topics, we'll do them then. But let's take a break. We'll be back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, we're here. So, I don't know. Anything else? We talked, this is the 10th anniversary of Iraq. There's the Pope. I don't know.
Well, they haven't done anything about the Pope.
They haven't done anything to Pope. There have been some rumors flying about, like, some sort of gay sex scandal, but, you know.
Yeah, whatever. Well, it's just rumors. There's a 10th, but we're out.
Well, there's some sort of report that's going to be delivered to the next report about some sort of
thing. I get that, but my point is that we don't know about it yet. It's just a fucking rumor. There's a 10th anniversary of Iraq, but we're out of Iraq.
We're out of Iraq. People were talking about, like, lessons learned, and the one that struck
lessons
out.
Lessons learned. Let's not go to fucking war again anytime soon.
No, the one that actually struck me, and let me see if I can bring up the reference here. I think it was James Fallows, but I'll tell you in just a second. It was Kevin. Yeah, it was James Fallows. Sorry, I'm so confusing. It was James Fallows. He wrote an article, "As We Near the 10th Anniversary of the Iraq War." It's in The Atlantic. And he gave a couple lessons for it. And there's reckoning. And he says, anybody now above age 30 should reflect on what he got right or wrong 10 years ago as we were going into it.
Well, let's see. I said we shouldn't fucking go into the stupid thing, that it was a big-ass mistake.
I also thought it was a big-ass mistake until about a month before we actually went. And at that point, I believe I said something along the lines of, we've gone far enough down this path. I think it's the wrong path. I think this is going to be a disaster. But we've gone far enough down this path that suddenly turning around at this moment and saying never mind would probably also be harmful. But I never flinched that I thought it was a mistake to actually go in.
Yeah. But I mean, you were just saying that, yeah, which is just, you know, just going after we fucking blew the bejesus out of the place, going and like just pulling up and leaving.
I was actually saying even before, like a few weeks before the actual invasion started.
Oh, no,
started,
fuck. I don't think I actually.
At that point, I was saying, look, you know, we've gone so far down this road. We've gone so far out on a limb saying this is necessary. This is necessary. This is necessary. If all of a sudden we said, never mind, we were kidding, that would itself have bad consequences.
I think the consequence, you know what? I would have rather have dealt with the repercussions than just go and say, whoops, just kidding.
In retrospect, I think you were right. At the time, I thought that the negative effect of suddenly turning around at the very last minute would be worse.
I will say this, that even like in the back of your mind, you thought, oh, they'll find some nuke or something, you know, maybe they'll find something. I thought that maybe,
you know, I didn't, like, I was actually pretty sure they had nothing, but And we've talked about this before. I didn't expect them to fuck up the piece as well as they did. I figured they'd roll in.
That was my biggest concern.
Yeah.
My biggest concern is like, how the fuck you occupy a country this big? Okay, all right, with just the number of troops we were sending.
The bottom line that I misunderstood about this was I honestly thought, well, and maybe this isn't the right way to put it. I hoped that Colin Powell would have more influence over the process than he ended up having. And instead, it was all Dick Cheney.
Yeah, it was all
Cheney. It was all Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld.
Yeah.
You know, and I think if Powell had been in charge of everything, even though there was still nothing to find, we would have had a much better result because he would have handled the whole process a lot more responsibly.
Yeah, but
that didn't happen. Yeah. And so anyway, they also mentioned accountability. James Fowles also mentions accountability. And this is something where he says this has failed in a large degree because he mentions after the Vietnam War, most of the people who were involved in escalating the Vietnam War and essentially creating a disaster out of that basically disappeared from the public stage. Whereas, you know, after Iraq, you know, okay, Hillary Clinton was for it, and she lost the primary race. A significant part of that was because of the Iraq war position. But Cheney, Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, Bremer, Rice, McCain, Abrams, a whole other folks are just still out there talking, still doing stuff. The only person who's disappeared, George W. Bush. He's gone into retirement, and he's basically said, you know, I remember his quote soon after Obama took over. He's like, the new president deserves my silence. And I'm like, there you go.
Well,
you know, but anyway, the main point, though, he makes a whole bunch of points. He makes seven of them. I won't go over all of them. The one I think that is actually the most relevant going forward, and I will read this whole thing, is threat inflation. And he says, as I think about this war and others the U.S. has contemplated or entered during my conscious life, I realize how strong is the recurrent pattern of threat inflation. Exactly once in the post-World War II era has the real threat been more ominous than officially portrayed. That was the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962, when the world really did come within moments of nuclear destruction, based on facts that have come out since then. Otherwise, we have the missile gap, the Gulf of Tonkin, the scale of the Soviet menace, Iraq, in each case, and there are probably a few others you could list too, in each case, the public soberly received official warnings about the imminent threat. In retrospect, those warnings were wrong or contrived or overblown or misperceived. Official claims about the evils of these systems were many times justified. Claims about the imminent threat were most of the time hyped. And then there's a follow-up on this article from, let me bring it up right now, Kevin Drum, which I think added more to that, which is useful. Is my computer's bringing it up? And the Kevin Drum article, come on, click. I hate my computer so much. I've got the little spinning wheel of death right now. Anyway, the point was, and I think this is very much true, when you listen to these things, when you have somebody argue about we absolutely have to do something because there's this big threat that these horrible, horrible, horrible things will happen if you don't do anything, almost all the time, those are vast exaggerations. 9 times out of 10. Every once in a while, maybe they'll be right. But 9 times out of 10, they are what you're hearing is a significant overreaction to try to get you excited and try to get you to jump into the action that whoever's talking thinks is necessary. And we don't pay enough attention to the other side that's saying, hey, wait a second, maybe it's not that bad. Hey, maybe we can live with this. And hey, even if it is a problem, maybe we can deal with it in a less radical way. And you don't listen to those voices as much, you don't hear them as much, or at least they don't end up having as much effect. And I think that's and even in geopolitical world. I mean, that applies to life half the time, too. So I finally got that article. It's James Fallows on Threat Inflation by Kevin Drum. And he quotes some of the stuff from James Fallows that I read. And then he says, We're all going to use the anniversary as a reason to cast blame and demand accountability for everybody, but it's more important to think and learn some actual lessons, and this is the key one. The lesson isn't that threats are never real. The lesson is that 9 times out of 10, the official account is overblown by at least half. So keep that in mind for the next war. If you listen to the war supporters and their case still sounds reasonable, even after you discount everything they say by 50% or more, then maybe you should support military action. But that ought to be your standard. Your default assumption should be that they're overstating the threat by at least that much. And so this is where, you know, of course, the obvious analogy at this point is people talking about Iran. You know, and Iran's going to get nukes. And oh my God, we got to do something. We got to do something. And whereas, you know, I've heard some calmer voices saying, you know, what's the word? And I've said this myself as well. So, you know. What's the worst that happens? They get their nukes. Pakistan has nukes. North Korea has nukes.
Right.
We live with those. We put, you know, there is a deterrent effect. The entire time the U.S. and Soviet Union were at odds, we lived on the notion of mutually assured destruction.
What the fuck? I mean, Iran uses one of their nukes. We track it to them. I mean, I don't understand. What is the good of it? What? So they use it on us or Israel. What do you think is going to happen? What the fuck do you think is going to happen? We're going to be obliterated off the fucking face of the earth.
And so the whole concern here revolves around the single notion that the Iranians who had actually set off a missile that would go after prototypically Israel are okay with self-destruction and are not worried about that as an outcome and think that is, in fact, perhaps a good outcome. And you certainly have people arguing that, well, they do think that because they'll get their reward in heaven or whatever, and they're irrational and blah, blah, blah. But I don't think the facts, if you look at Iran's behavior, you know, over the decades, we may not agree with them, but they have acted somewhat rationally based on, you know, what they perceive to be their interests and needs. They're not like, I don't know. I think containment, and frankly, let's step back even further than that. Let's say you did have the madman in Iran that was willing to do this. How is this any different than what we did with the Soviet Union?
Right.
First of all, Iran doesn't have the capability, and in our worst dreams at the moment, doesn't have the capability to attack the U.S. Maybe they have the ability to attack Israel or other places in the Middle East. Let's say they blow up Israel completely, and Israel blows them up, and suddenly we have a big radioactive wasteland in the Middle East. We're still okay. I mean,
that's even the worst.
I mean, that's kind of harsh to say. It would be an immense tragedy of horrible proportions, but.
But I mean, we're talking about what is the worst case? I mean, and why would we go to a war that would probably, you know, you're talking about. That would be the worst case, which is highly unlikely, but yet why would we go to a war that would for certain cost hundreds of thousands of lives, for sure, with no guarantee of, you know, that we did actually anything for the good of humanity in the end, or for our safety, or anybody else's, for that matter.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like, so I mean, this is where I come from. Like, I've always thought containment was a perfectly legitimate strategy for Iran. I mean, why is it different? I mean, it's not like Pakistan is the most stable country in the world either. It's definitely certainly not North Korea.
That's for sure.
You know, I mean, North Korea's even started to talk, hey, we've got missiles that can reach the west coast of the U.S. now. And we're like, maybe not. But yeah, they're certainly working towards that. And hey, if they can hit anywhere in the west coast, guess what? It's right where I am in Seattle. You know, that's the closest spot in the U.S. mainland other than Hawaii to them. Mainland's not in the – Hawaii's not in the mainland. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
But anyway, look, you know, we're not going to war in any of these other places, and people like are going off and off, and let's calm down. We've got, you know, let's. And there's some negotiations going on with Iran that seem to be going in a decent direction right now. But
well, and apparently, look, Dennis Rodman went to visit North Korea yes. And apparently said that
he's a nice guy.
That he loves basketball. I said Obama loves basketball. Let's start there. He asked me to give Obama something to say and do one thing. He wants Obama to do one thing. Call him.
Yep.
What the fuck is Dennis Rodman doing in North Korea? Why would I mean, okay.
Well, and frankly, in some of these areas, I mean, you know, what could it hurt? What could it really hurt if Obama picked up the phone and said, okay, here you go. What do you want to say?
I guess I would. I guess. I just think it's quite a weird way of communicating that.
No, it is a weird way, but
through Dennis Rodman?
We've got very limited official contacts. There are some. There's some talks going on, but like.
Well, it's not even you have to go through an official contact. What? You couldn't put out a press release?
No, I know. But, you know, but my point is, like, there's all this, like, whenever you're trying to. There's always a protocol of you start with lower level people and you work your way up. But I mean, in the end, what the hell could it kill?
Dennis Rodman.
I know Dennis Rodman. I mean, and from what I've heard, the administration was kind of annoyed that he did that. He did not do it officially sanctioned. But you know, in the end, what could it really hurt? Like, what could it really hurt if Obama picked up the phone and called the leaders of North Korea or Iran or whatever and said, "Hey, let's short circuit all this shit. What? Let's make a deal. What do we really have to do here to make sure that we feel good about each other and we don't feel like you're going to attack us and we don't feel like you're going to vice versa, you know? And you know, you might, it might not work. It might crash. But what do you have to lose?
Well, no, yeah, I know you got nothing to lose. I just thought it was kind of hilarious.
yeah. Well, and there have been a couple of high-profile visits to North Korea lately. Like, didn't the one of the guys from Google go there last month, Schmidt or somebody?
Really?
Yeah, I think Eric Schmidt went there a couple months ago.
I know there's somebody I went to master school that also went there. They're into tourism. They have, like, a tourism company, and they were there. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but is it me? But I have zero interest in going on a tourism trip to North Korea. I mean, let me go through the list of places that I want to visit, and I'm like, why the hell doesn't North Korea bubble up to the top 20, 30, 50, 70, 100? I could pick 1,000 places that I would like to go visit first before I go to fucking North Korea.
By the way, I should mention that one of the tweets that Dennis Rodman made from North Korea, where they've just in the last couple of weeks turned on a 3G network so he could do this, but he said, hey, maybe while I'm here, I'll run into that Gangnam-style guy.
Oh, you fucking idiot.
Who, of course, is not from North Korea. He's from South Korea.
You fucking idiot. I mean, really? Okay, I'm hoping he was joking. Okay, all right.
He may have been.
Yeah, I'm hoping he was joking.
Yeah.
All right.
So next week I'll do the show live from North Korea. How's that?
Great.
I'll get right on that. And then the week after I'll be in Iran. So
there you go. I mean, that
would
be
all set. And then Cuba. Why not? You know.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. Actually, I'll do you a favor. I'll go to Cuba for you.
Oh, thanks.
You know, that there's like all these. You know, I was talking to Sam. I was telling him before we started the show that. You know, I found out that at Miami International Airport, they spend passengers spend $18 million a year wrapping their baggage in plastic. I am going to guess that half of that money is for luggage that's going on the Cuba trips that go out of Miami International. That's what I think. But, you know, so none of the stuff.
Last year, my mom went to Cuba on a short, like, junket. So I'll have to ask her if she got her luggage wrapped.
In plastic, yes.
Yes,
there you go. See, she got the $15 a pop. Yep. I'll tell you, I'm thinking of fucking quitting my job and fucking starting wrapping fucking $18 million a year. I was going to start fucking wrapping bags in plastic.
I'll wrap whatever you want. It doesn't have to be your bag.
Oh God. Okay. All right. Let's just end here. Okay. Good. All right. Good. Yeah.
Thanks everybody for joining us. As usual, email me at avilsmay@avilsmay.com with questions, comments, thoughts, suggestions, whatever. Tell your friends, share us on Facebook, all that kind of stuff. And enjoy your week. We'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.